This recording is a production of Faith Builders Educational Programs. This presentation was recorded at Teachers Week 2015, held at Faith Builders on August 4 through 7.
I want to know why you're here, what you came to learn, what you're expecting me to say today. Why are you here? Okay, let's address the elephant. Why are you smiling? What assumptions do you make about me based on the way I'm dressed here? I look like a nurse. What gave you that idea? The stethoscope around my neck, the name badge that says Ryan Hoover RN, the pens, the beeper on my side. Yeah, Mayo Clinic, we still carry pagers. The bandage scissors, the narcotics key in my pocket. What gave you the fact I was a nurse? Because I look like a nurse. And if I showed up in my patient's room dressed like a skater dude from the park, they would not assume I was a nurse. Object lesson number one, freebie right off the top. If you want to be respected like a teacher, dress the part. If you want to show up in your classroom dressed like a skater dude and then insist they call you Mr. Zook and expect them to respect you, you may have a problem. Object lesson number one, dress the part. Number two, how you dress says something about what you think of the occasion. How you dress says something about what you think of the occasion, and regardless what your high school students want to tell you, that it doesn't matter how we dress, it's just what's in the heart matters. I took my students to court one day. I tried to do this every year, go to a session of court, and that day was miserably hot. It was February, but all the heat in the Allen County Courthouse was being pumped into courtroom B. And Judge Richard Warren, who has won every election he's ever ran in by a landslide, at the recess, specifically told the lawyers, he said, gentlemen, if you want to shed your suit coats, I grant you that today because of the unreasonable temperature in this courtroom. It was 80-some degrees in that court. It was ridiculous. And when we went back on the record, the first thing he said was, I want in the permanent record that the lawyers appearing here today without suit coats are not a reflection of their professionalism or of their case, but a reflection of the ridiculous temperature in this courthouse. Dress is important. And lesson number three, get their attention. If you want to have a good object lesson, you've got to get their attention. I walked in dressed like this. I had your attention. I felt it as soon as I came in the back and he started giving me the mic. The head's just meowing. I felt your attention. Get their attention. You can make an object lesson out about just about anything if you have their attention. So why do you have devotionals? Why do you have devotionals? This is your daily schedule. It's packed full. And we want to take, 20 minutes in the morning in the brightest part of their day when they're actually awake and study a subject that's not on a state test, it's not on an achievement test, it's not a graduation requirement, it's not on a college entrance exam. And we're taking a hammer and chisel and trying to squeeze something in here. So why do you do this? What are your goals for devotions? What do you write down in that first blank I gave you? What are your goals? Anybody? Do you not have goals?
Are there more handouts?
Are there more handouts? Where are the extra handouts? They were up here somewhere. If you don't have a handout, raise your hand. There we go. Pass them around, good teacher style. If you still don't have a handout, keep your hand raised and we will get more made. Why do you have devotions? Anybody? Yell.
To teach the most important thing.
So in practical terms, you're trying to teach the fundamentals of Scripture. You want them to memorize the Bible. Do we need more handouts yet? Hands high if you don't have one. I think we're good, Matt. Thanks. Teach the fundamentals of Scripture, okay? What else? Set the tone for the day. Next.
Inspire.
If you aren't inspired, they won't be either. If I had shown up here today wearing this, I had your attention. I said, well, we're going to have planning devotionals. I really don't feel prepared. I didn't have much time to work on this. And I'd really feel a whole lot more comfortable if Travis was up here and speaking and I was in the audience. But I guess it's my turn to have planning devotionals today. So we're going to have planning. If I wasn't inspired, If I showed up in this monotone, you'd be considering walking out. Say, whoa, there's three other sessions I'd like to be at. This looks like tough sledding for the next hour. I'm out of here. If he turns around, I'm gone. If you aren't inspired, they won't be either. I have four purposes for devotions. You have to make this personal. Okay, we love to plagiarize off these things, and I put that in the description. You steal any of this, but if you don't make it personal, it's going to feel really wooden. Hoover said I need to do this, so I'm going to force this. No, you have to make it personal. I have four goals for dual devotions. I want them to learn his word. Do you have any rough idea where the book of Jonah might be found? Please don't show me a high schooler who's still looking for the index because he can't find Isaiah. Now, I'm not insisting you have the minor prophets memorized in order, but at least be ballpark where you're headed and not be muckering around in the end of the New Testament with James and Peters and Johns and things looking for Joel. Okay? Number two, learn his heart. What does God really want? What is this God? Is he a fearful, wrathful, you know, hard-nosed? You know, what does God want out of life? Number three, can I show my students that God is real? Because I think we do a pretty decent job at this intellectual knowledge. There is a God. There is beyond the azure blue. There is a God. Do they know it? Do they feel it? Can I drop that intellectual knowledge about 14 inches south and make it a conviction? That even when I don't see it, even when I don't see the azure blue, I know it. I believe in the sun even when it isn't shining. Can I show my students, can I make God real to my students? And number four, to see his fingerprints in the world around me. When they see the photosynthesis in a leaf, when they hold an eight-week-old baby like Moses has here, do you see the fingerprints of God? I'm a hopeless case when it comes to babies, okay? I'm solidly in dad mode, okay? That's why I have pictures of my girls in all my slides, right? I'm a papa and proud of it. And when I FaceTime with my wife and Liesl says, say hi to papa, she's sticking her face in, I melt. Do I see the image of God in my child? Or do I see another brat that needs care and diapers cost money? And they wake me up on Saturday morning at 7 o'clock. Or do I see the image of God? Do I see the Spirit of God? Okay, mechanics of devotions. I have four things there. This is not some heady list, just guiding principles. Sing good music. And notice I didn't say sing music. We do that. I said sing good music. There's lots of fluff out there. There's lots of Twinkies and Swiss cake roll music. And those are good in their place, okay? Kumbaya has its day. But sing good music. Teach them good music. My daughter right now just turned two, and she loves the song Hail to the Brightness of Zion's Glad Morning. This is a song most of us don't sing on a routine basis and has words in it like verger. When was the last time you used that in a random conversation? But if Rosanna's putting her to bed and I'm not there, through the house, Papa, Papa, sing Bright Morning. Sing Bright Morning. I say, right here? No. Sing Bright Morning. Back to her room. Sing good music with your students. Sing good quality stretching music. Children are pliable. They'll soak up anything you feed them. Feed them the best. Give them steak. There's enough hot dogs and Twinkies out there. Give them steak. And make sure it's good T-bone that's medium rare and charcoal grilled. Variety is the spice of life. Variety. Keep things fresh. Again, most of my background's in high school, okay? So I see the world through high school lens. So you younger student teachers may have to, you know, filter and make this, you know, tweak things for your class. High school students like variety. I think the younger ones do too. They like variety. Number three, not lengthy or belabored. Personal experience, when I got lengthy and long-winded, they went fish market. You've seen a fish market, right? Open mouth, glassy eye. Okay, duh. Which leads to number four, not preachy. Now, I love good preaching. I love fiery preaching. I love to hear men of God let fly. But I found in school it didn't work for me. Maybe preaching style works for you. That's great. If it works for you, glorious. Didn't work for me. And I could just feel them zone out. So I try not to preach. Those are my four little tips in general. Jumping into section three, ideas. You can have a book study. Well, let's pause here a second. Most of us run about a 36-week year, 180 days, 36 weeks. Okay? If you go to a weekly plan, and we'll look at this later, all you need is five things 36 times. Okay, so if there's five ideas here that really fire you and say, I could do that every Wednesday, all you need is 36 of those, and you're good to go. Okay, so stick with me. I'll show you how this works. Book study. Could we study through the book of Esther? Every Thursday we're going to study, what can we learn from the book of Esther? What can we learn from the book of Ruth? Ruth is kind of a scandalous book. I mean, love stories and midnight rendezvous and you name it. What can we learn from the book of Ephesians? What can we learn from the book of you name it? Okay, we could do a character study. We could talk about Solomon, Mary, Peter, Barzillai. How many of you know the story of Barzillai? He familiar to you? Look at that. I got two hands. I'm going to give you the brief on Barzillai. This is a man that cared for others. This is Old Testament history. David's being driven out of Jerusalem. I believe Absalom has the throne, I think. David's on his way out of Jerusalem. This is not his brightest hour. This is not his day. I can only fathom that his head was not real high and his shoulders were not real proud. This was not a good afternoon. And Barzillai comes along, and these guys are, you know, banished out to yonder. And Barzillai shows up, and it mentions two other guys, but it seems like Barzillai was kind of the ringleader. He shows up with milk and cheese and bread and meat and bowls. I mean, he totally spread a feast for these guys. Now, we like to think it was, well, David and two or three other guys. No, this was doodles of guys. This is a big crowd. And Barzillai shows up and just caters the whole lunch. And he didn't send a bill. Barzillai saw someone in need and said, I'm there. He didn't ask permission, and he didn't ask for payment. He just filled the need. Are there needs in your community? You see needs around you? I live in Rochester. There are needs there. Are there needs in your community? Are there needs in Meadville? Are there needs in Lancaster? Are there needs in Traverse City? God's people are called to just meet needs. Later on in David's life, he's heading back into Jerusalem, and he sees Barzillai. He's like, Barzillai, come along. You took care of me. I'm going to take care of you. Come live with me in the palace. Barzillai is like, no. I'm too old. What do all the fancy niceties of the palace mean to me? Scratch that. Hey, over here's my friend, you know, this guy. Honor him instead. When the day of his payment comes, he passes it off to somebody else. We need Barzillai's in our church. Talk to your students about Barzillai. Moving on, word study. Can we talk about words, common words like all? You ever notice that four times in the Great Commission? All power, go into all the world, teach all things, I'm with you all way. Psalm 103, the last two verses. Praise ye all his works in all places of his dominion. That sounds like, includes pretty much everybody. Have a word study. Or find rare words that we don't talk about very much, like profane. What does profane mean? We think profane means foul language. It doesn't. Profane is a value word. You don't value appropriately. It's a flippant, irreverent. Yeah, flippant. Don't be a profane person like Esau. He didn't value his birthright. He sold it dirt cheap on Craigslist. Okay? Or these profane old wine, profane babblings. Profane's a value word. Go into Psalms. What does Haggaion mean? We do you to wit. Wist ye not I should be among. What do some of these words mean? Crack these open. Go for those little known words. Theme study. Could we study a theme once a week? Hospitality. God's people are called to be hospitable. And we think we do really well with this, and sometimes I wonder how well we do with it. Hospitality is not inviting the preacher over for Sunday lunch. Well, that's part of it. Hospitality includes giving when I will get nothing back. Giving to those who have nothing to give me back. Now, my wife and I live in Rochester, in the city there, within sight of Mayo Clinic. And we have offered lodging to pretty much anybody of the plain people we see, and sometimes they come to us. I get a phone call, and this brother said, yeah, my niece and her husband are coming up there. Can they stay with you? Sure. Now, this man has a medical condition. He has very little stamina, and climbing a set of stairs multiple times would be very difficult for him. So my wife and I put an air mattress in the living room, right? That's not hospitality. Hospitality says, give him your bed and you go upstairs. Give him your best. And I'm told, as we interact more with Muslim culture, I was talking to someone the other night, they said the way to speak to a Muslim's heart is the richest of hospitality. If I will give you my best, Well, it seems easy enough. Let's do it. Let's reach these people. Hospitality. Can we reach them through our generosity? Could we talk about vices? Proud people versus broken people is a poem I'll read you briefly. My name is pride. I am a cheater. I cheat you of your God-given destiny because you demand your own way. I cheat you of contentment because you deserve better than this. I cheat you of knowledge because you already know it all. I cheat you of healing because you're too full of you to forgive. I cheat you of holiness because you refuse to admit when you're wrong. I cheat you of vision because you'd rather look in the mirror than out a window. I cheat you of genuine friendship because nobody's going to know the real you. I cheat you of love because real romance demands sacrifice. I cheat you of greatness in heaven because you refuse to wash feet on earth. I cheat you of God's glory because I've convinced you to seek your own. My name is pride. I am a cheater. You like me because you think I'm looking out for me. You like me because you think I'm looking out for you. Untrue. I'm looking to make a fool of you. God has so much for you, I admit. But don't worry. If you stick with me, you'll never know it. My name is pride, and I am a cheater. We talk to our students about pride and the insidious ways it gets into our heart. How about prayers? Beautiful prayer. David at the dedication of the temple, "Blessed be thou, Lord God of Israel, our Father, forever and ever. All that is in the earth is thine. Both riches and honor come of thee, and in thine hand it is to make great, to give strength unto all. Now therefore, our God, we praise thee and bless thy glorious name." Beautiful prayer. Have you studied the Lord's Prayer? My father-in-law preached a week of revival meetings just in the Lord's Prayer. I heard the one sermon, "Give us this day our daily bread." 7 or 8 words convicted me to the core. Can we look at these prayers? The Pharisee and the publican, all we know about them is what they prayed. And that was plenty enough for Christ to draw some lessons. Can we talk about prayers on Thursday morning? The incredible magnitude of God, I can pretty much skip this part because we've been seeing this every single day from Morris. He meets out the heaven in a span. Now, what's your span? Your span's about 9 inches, thumb to fingertip. And the heavens, you know, trillions and trillions and trillions of light years, not miles, are just a span to God. He said he meets the waters in his hand. He made gallons of water in the Pacific Ocean. That is just a handful to God, just a scoop. And he cares about the likes of me. How big is our God? Could we talk about types and shadows? No, as a student, I never got into types. Yeah, boy, this is ooey-gooey stuff. I don't know, man. It wasn't until I got into Bible school that types and shadows came alive. Look at Joseph for me a second. Rejected by his family. Sold. Falsely accused. Imprisoned. Raised to power so that he could save his family. Let's fast forward to Christ. Rejected by his family. Sold by Judas. Imprisoned in death. Gloriously raised to power so that he could save you and I from eternal damnation. Powerful type of Christ. David. There's a book by Christian Light, Seeing Christ in the Tabernacle. You can go through all the pieces of the tabernacle. Can we talk about types and shadows to our students? All through the Old Testament, God has these arrow keys. He's coming. He's coming. Don't miss him. He's coming. Don't miss it. It's coming. And he showed up, and they're like, "Who? What? Huh?" We can miss him today, too. We're going to skip object lessons, number 5, and come back. Books. "I Don't Have Enough Faith to Be an Atheist" by Frank Turek. Have you seen this? He's a Christian writer, author, speaker, apologist, University of North Carolina. I went and heard him speak at the University of Michigan and promptly bought a case of his books, had him sign them to my students, and we took it home and read it for devotions the rest of the year. This is heavy reading. This is not second grade material. Logical case for Christianity. 12 points that prove Christianity is true. He starts out with, is there truth? And if there is truth, can we know it? And to the people that say there is no truth, all you have to do is ask them, is that true? If there is no truth, well, you just made a truth claim in saying that there's no truth. So if there is no truth, you cannot say that there's no truth because that's saying that that's true. It rapidly becomes intellectual constipation. You really get bound up quick here. Furthermore, can we know truth? No, we can't know truth, but you claim to know that truth. You claim to know that you can't know. Well, so how can you know if you can't know? How do you know that you can't know? Yeah, this is the big stuff of philosophy. Okay, I do have a footnote on him. He is open to an indescribed amount of time between Genesis 1:1 and 1:2. After that, he's good on 6 days of creation, but he is not committed to a young earth. So if that's a problem with you, he's like, you know, the earth could be millions of years old. I don't know. Creation happened about 6,000 years ago, but we don't know how long darkness was on the face of the deep. So I just throw that out there in the interest of honesty. Vinegar Boy is an allegory. Change of Allegiance by Dean Taylor, available from Christian Light. Report for Duty by Lily Bear, a man who in Ohio was brutally treated, harassed, assaulted, and eventually died in the hands of the U.S. Army in World War I, I think, for his refusal to put on a uniform. I don't cry easily. I wept at that book. Here's a man who said, I believe it, and I don't much care what it costs. These are the people we're trying to raise in our classrooms, aren't they? Can we show them these stories in devotions time? Awaiting the Dawn by Dorcas Hoover, John Troyer's Murder in Guatemala in the 80s. Answers to Prayer by George Mueller, The Call of the SSS, Belial Hosteller. God and Uncle Dale, a book that came out a few years ago by Rod and Staff. Another book of people that paid serious prices to follow their conscience, to follow what God said. They paid the price. These are stories of people that decided to follow Christ and they didn't much care what it cost. Oh, to have a church full of those today. Wouldn't that be cool? I don't care what it costs. I've got no selling point. What would God do with a church full of those kind of people today? Can we inspire our students to this level of understanding, of this level of passion? So weekly plan, what I've been talking about. Monday, can we talk about an attribute of God each Monday? His holiness, His love, His justice, His eternity, His magnitude. Tuesday, can we talk about a commandment of God? Go through Scripture and find a place where God told someone to do something. Noah, build a boat. And by the way, most of this was action verbs, you English teacher. There's very few being verbs. Go read Hebrews 11. There's a couple of being verbs. Most are action. By faith, Noah built. By faith, Abraham went out. By faith, Abraham sacrificed. Now, there's a few he believed and a few things like this. Most of them are action verbs. But go through Scripture and find where God told someone to do something concrete. And maybe not so concrete. Walk before me and be thou perfect. What does that mean? Wednesday, talk about a character study. Thursday, in name of Christ. On the next page of your handout, page 3, I have 94 names of Christ. What does it mean that He's the Alpha and Omega? Is that just the name of an old publishing company? What is that? What does it mean that He's the end of the law or the son of the righteousness? What does it mean to be the Ancient of Days? What does it mean to be the living bread? I don't know. It's bread. It beats me. Could be white chocolate chip. Could be whole wheat. I don't know. It's bread. What do these things mean? And Friday, here's what I enjoyed. And again, you'll see my passion for high school here. Friday, I enjoyed talking about current events. Whatever is happening. Is it an ordination in your church that's coming up that we're talking about? Is it a church plant? Or, God forbid, a split. We seem to do that occasionally. Is it we're expanding? Is it a new baby that's being born? Was it a two-headed calf? You know, what are your students buzzing about? Are our students, you know, there's tens of things that get their attention. Okay, what's happening in the news? Is it marriage equality? Is it ISIS? Is it the Super Bowl? Oh, whoops, it's ISIS again. Or what President Obama said, is his name Bruce or her name Caitlin? Or is it Planned Parenthood's grisly videos? Are we willing to talk to our students about what they're reading about in the front page of the paper? About what they're getting from FoxNews.com? About what they're getting, sadly, from the sports section? Are we willing to talk about the fact that Christ would not be a NASCAR fan? Or are we just like this guy and, well, it's all cool? In all these things, whatever has your students rattled right now, whatever they're buzzing about, how does a Two Kingdom Anabaptist view this in 2015? What would Jesus have to say about this? Would Jesus be campaigning for Rand Paul? Would Jesus be screaming death threats at the homosexuals? What would Jesus say? What would a Two Kingdom Anabaptist? How does a Two Kingdom Anabaptist view and interpret this event? And number 8, delegate. Delegate. When in doubt, obfuscate. And when in charge, delegate. Now you can scrap the obfuscate, that was just part of the quote. When in charge, delegate. You should have the fathers and ministry and whatever from your congregation coming in once a week and having devotions. That's 20% of your year right there. That's one day a week. Or one day every other week. Okay? And if they're slow to make it happen, you know, assist them. Have a sign-up sheet. And if they don't fill out the sign-up sheet, assign them a date. Okay, we assign you each a date this year, and then we have all these blanks you can pick your other two times. How about a student devotions committee? Now, again, you make this work in your classroom, but could you appoint two or three students and yourself as a member of the committee? And it's their responsibility, because guess what? Where are our young men going to learn to speak in public? Where are young men going to get practice? I mean, how do you think I ever reached a point that I could stand up here relatively comfortably this morning? Dressed as a nurse, might we add. I've been practicing. Where did that practice start? In a classroom when I had to get up and read a psalm. Where do we learn to pray in public? Classroom's a good place to work on that. Now, you may be thinking, oh, school kids are hard on each other. That's a brutal crowd. I found they're not so brutal when their turn is next week. When their turn is coming, it does a lot to temper their judgment. It really softens their scoring. If my turn is coming, I won't say too much because tomorrow it's me. Can we work on this? Practice this? Okay, if once a week is too much, let's go once a month. We have half an hour, and I've got about 30 object lessons. It's a minute apiece. Good luck. You have the list. Which do you want to hear about? And basically, okay, so your list, I have general objects, and I have students' choice. I made my students, and one of them is here this week, I made them the offer. I said, you bring in the object, I'll make up the lesson. Not on the spot. Don't commit yourself to that. Because, I mean, 15-year-old boys are not dumb, and they are willing to put in some effort. And they're going to try to make you sweat. And if you sweat and pull it off, you'll have their respect. Like, dude, he did it, man. He put in the work. Cool. So never commit yourself to a timeline. Now, if you want to say within 2 weeks or something, sure, but this is not going to be on the spot. Some of these things take work. So those four objects are the things I remember. There were many others. And then singular objects, C, are stories and things I have that are not necessarily going to be things you can easily replicate. But I throw them out here for your inspiration anyway. So what do you want to hear about? Strawberry cap. It's one of my favorites. The strawberry cap lives in Jonah in my Bible. This is the actual cap of a strawberry I ate. Now, I was raised on a strawberry farm. So I can tell you this thing's huge and perfect. And when I ate this strawberry, I very carefully took a knife and fastidiously cut off and trimmed this thing off, and I carefully stuck it in my Bible and pressed it, and it's getting a little beat up. It's not looking near as impressive now, but it was perfect. And it is huge for a strawberry cap. It was symmetrical. It was perfect. It was just wonderful in every way. Abigail, what did this strawberry taste like? She says good. Travis, how red was it? He doesn't know. Kyle, was there bird peck marks in it?
Probably not.
Probably not. Moses, was it red, pink, had a white cap, tip? What do you think? He doesn't know. None of you know because you weren't there. I don't know either because I wasn't paying attention. I was so mesmerized with the cap, I'd have no recollection of the berry. It hit me one day in church as I was flipping through my Bible and saw this cap. It just hit me like a ton of bricks. I don't remember the berry. I was so wrapped up in the cap, I missed the berry. I was so wrapped up in the hulls and the husks and the trash of life, I missed the fruit. And young men, don't get so wrapped up in the hulls and husks of life that you miss the fruit. She may be pretty. She may be sweet. She may have a lovely alto voice, if such a thing is possible. And she may be a complete flake. Don't get so wrapped up in the hulls and husks of life that you miss the fruit. And young ladies, he may be studly and cute and charming and have an awesome truck, but he's disrespectful of authority. That's going to cause you problems in a marriage for years after that truck has long gone through the crusher. Don't get so wrapped up in the hulls and husks and caps that you miss the meat. Next. While we're here, this thing also lives in Jonah. This is a photocopy of the song, "Oh Happy Is the Man." Youth Sunday school class, us guys like to sing a verse a song back in the day. And so our Sunday school teacher had a printer, you know, with this feature. You could stick the thing on there and say how many you wanted onto a page. It would automatically shrink it to put that many on a page. And so one day he was feeling fun and got it shrunk down to this size. And we all, you know, had a good laugh of singing about it. And I left it in my Bible. And years later, I came back to it and said, you know what? I can make the song so small to make it worthless. I can make my Christianity so small that it becomes worthless. I can make the marks of Christ, I can make the fruit of the Spirit in my life so small it becomes invisible, it becomes worthless, that I lose it. And the rest of the world, yeah, it's there, you got to go find it, but it's there if you can find it. Next. Pepsi, can of Pepsi, this was good. I was teaching let's just call her a health nut. And I had this idea, and I yelled up to the room, "Sister Bear, I'm preaching on Pepsi this morning." She sticks his head out the door. "You what?" I said, "You're invited." She said, "I don't know if I want to subject him to this kind of heresy." I said, "The offer stands." The other teacher, the junior high teacher, "I'm going to come too." Before long, I had the entire school crammed into my classroom because I said we were going to talk about Pepsi. So I grabbed one of the high school guys that likes Pepsi. Handed him an ice-cold can. You see, presentation here, little things make a difference. You're trying to get their attention. In any of these things, get their attention. Now, this whole illustration worked just as well with milk. It wouldn't have the pop factor of milk. It wouldn't have the wow factor with milk. Oh, okay. Pepsi, though. You walk into a high school classroom wearing a suit coat, carrying a can of Pepsi, and you've got the attention of a 14-year-old. So I hand him the can of Pepsi. I said, "Austin, has this can of Pepsi done you any good?" "Well, yeah, it's a can of Pepsi." I said, "But has it done you any good? Have you enjoyed it?" "No." "Okay, great. But you still have it, right?" "Yeah." "But has it done you any good?" "No." I said, "Okay, crack it open." And that signature, you could have heard a pin drop. There was a lot of salivating going on in my classroom right then. I said, "Has it done you any good?" "No." I said, "But you opened it. Hasn't done any good." I said, "Okay, now hear me out here. Take a swig, but just keep it on your tongue. Enjoy the taste and the fizz. Don't swallow," which is harder than you think. He does this. I said, "Has it done you any good?" I said, "Okay, you can go ahead and swallow. Please don't choke. When will that Pepsi do you some good?" He's like, "Well, once I swallow it." "Okay, so you've swallowed it. Now what? You feeling the buzz of the caffeine?" "Well, no." I said, "It's not going to do you any good until you metabolize it, until you metabolize that sugar and caffeine and actually burn it for energy in your cells." On the shelf, I still have it. I can open it and still have it. It hasn't done me any good. I can even read it. I can even memorize it. It has done me no good until I burn it for fuel in my cells, until I live it out, until I live it out, until it makes a difference in how I walk down the hallway. It really hasn't done me any good other than just some nice poetry to read. It hasn't done you any good, so nice and buzz and tickle and sweetness on your tongue until you metabolize that Pepsi. Next. Cracked spatula. Cracked spatula. and it just dawns me it didn't come along. Sad. My wife has a wooden spatula sort of thing. It's, you know, bamboo or something, wood of some variety. And it's cracked in two places, and one of these days it's going to break. And this thing's old, and it's worn smooth, and this thing's old and about worn out and junk, right? Compare that to a brand new one. Which is worth more? Brand new one. Wrong. The brand new one has done nothing in life. It has potential value, so we'll give you a pass there. But it has done nothing. It has not stirred the first batch of scrambled eggs. It has not made the first pan of gravy. It has not served me supper once. That is a worthless spatula. The old busted one, however, that thing has made many a meal. See, we tend to get value all messed up here. Which has done more good for the human race? A brand new Ford, four-door, duly decked out, or the old beat-up clunker that the bed's about to fall off? The shifter's actually gone, and you have to have a pair of vice grips on to shift the thing? Why are you laughing? You've seen these trucks in your farm, have you? Which truck has done more good? The brand-new thing in the showroom has not done the first ounce of good. The old one is who's hauled wood to Grandma. The old one who's pulled the neighbor out of the ditch. The old one has done us good. Don't get confused into thinking that old things are worthless, because this same concept applies to old people. You know, Grandpa, my grandfather's in Virginia now. I mean, he's slowly dying of congestive heart failure. I mean, he can't even walk to the mailbox. I mean, he walked his gaiter so he can get to the mailbox. He's doing good today. Is his life valuable? American capitalism, by the way, says his life is not valuable, because he can no longer run a bulldozer and, you know, do heavy machinery operations and mechanic work as he once did. So he must be unvaluable. He must be borderline worthless. That's American capitalism. You're valued by what you can produce. Can we see value in what you have done? Next. The chess pawn. I'm not a chess player, so don't get too picky here. And if you're a chess player, particularly if your class likes chess, again, get their attention. If your students have no idea what chess is, this illustration is going to go really, really flat. Okay, get their attention. Find things in their life that they relate to. Chess pawn. Which is the most valuable, which is the least valuable piece on a chessboard? Well, I'm told it's the pawn. You've got like eight of them. You can kill them off. You kind of swap them in this little trade. Okay, I know I'm going to stick my pawn out here, and you're going to kill him, but that'll lure you out of there so I can get to there. You know, pawns are kind of the worthless currency, right? Am I right? Are you willing to play a chess game without pawns? Why not? You just told me they're worthless. So why don't you just play without? So if they're so worthless at the beginning of the game, say, you know what, I'm just going to speed this game up. I'm just going to take my eight pawns off. Well, suddenly I see shaking heads. They're not worthless. They do have value. Every piece on that chessboard has value. I may not be the MAM pilot that flies people around. Oh, how awesome that would be. I may not be the preacher. I may not be even the janitor that tries to keep it cool in here. I still have value to the church. Because if I don't show up on Sunday, that's one less tenor singer. And if all the tenors didn't show up, well, that would be a sad day, wouldn't it? Even those things we say are not worth just a whole lot, they have value. Connect with your underlings in class, the underdogs. Connect with those people. Reach out to them. Abraham Lincoln had a third grade education. Connect to those underdogs. Show them that they are valuable. Boring chess pawns. Next. Bluetooth dongle. Well, I've got this clicker here and a Bluetooth dongle. Same concept. Exact same concept. I've got a mouse in here with an even tinier dongle. Is my clicker worth much? Clickety, 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 click. Without the dongle. Zip. It is perfectly junk. Little things are not worthless. Little things are important. Little things drive big things. You can look you can look today, you can look back in history and say, well, that's why that happened. Yeah, that's why that happened. No, it was a little thing way back here. What's she so upset about? What have these two been feuding over, the Hatfields and McCoys? As I understand, it was a little, it was over a chicken or something like this. David and his sons and all their fighting. Little things set them off and set off years-long problems. Little things drive big things. Never think that because the dongle on my wireless mouse is small, that it is not valuable. And we're talking small, too. I mean, it is small. And the chip inside it is even smaller. Little things are important. And you'll see that theme on multiple of these. So, I mean, if you're talking first graders, you know, Bluetooth dongles might not be their thing. But several of these come back to that theme. Little things are important. Next. Who'll be next? Ping pong paddle. What's the regulation on the size of a ping pong paddle in tournament play? Anybody know? I'm told there is no regulation on size. That you are perfectly, if you made it out of the right materials and thickness and, you know, rubber and whatnot, you could put two handles on the back of a 4x8 sheet of plywood and play tournament ping pong with it. What did Paul say? Not all things, all things are lawful, but not all things are expedient. There are some things that are legal that aren't smart. Guess what? Teenagers are good at this. There's no rule against it. Well, that doesn't make it smart. Okay? You can play ping pong with a 4x8 sheet of plywood. That doesn't mean it's smart. There are things that are legal that are still stupid. Next. Roadkill. I wanted to bring one. I have a friend who does that. And I didn't see any. So we're going to have to go to... let's go to about... There we go. I gave you a picture instead. Bring a roadkill into your class. You will have their attention. What did this fox do wrong?
Didn't get out of the way.
Do you think that fox disobeyed some moral law of Almighty God? He was in the wrong place at the wrong time. And students, you can go to the wrong places and end up spiritually dead. And sometimes physically dead. You know, very few murders happen in church. There are places on this earth that you should not go. That once you go there, you may end up different than you expected. Simply by where you chose to be. The friends you choose to hang out with have an impact on your destiny. The music you choose to listen to is going to affect you. Why this fox chose to cross the road right now, I don't know. A tenth of a second either way, and he'd have been in good shape. Car traveling at 60 miles an hour travels something like 90 feet a second. A tenth of a second is 9 feet. What? Gobs of space. Little decisions make a difference. The friends you choose, where you choose to go to Bible school, who you choose to date, these things all add up to big decisions. And for this fox, it was his last breath. Next.
Plain suit.
Plain suit. Again, this was told over our pulpit this spring. Dennis stood up to preach. He said, I have to tell you a story. This morning, I was getting dressed, and my wife said, there's a spot on that shirt. And he said, don't worry, my coat will cover it. I'm fine. He said, driving to church, it hit him. Don't worry, my suit coat will cover it. How many spots does my suit coat have to cover? How many sins of the flesh do I ask my suit to cover? How much carnality does your covering cover? How much lust, how much greed, how much pride, how much envy, how much anger? I have a problem with anger sometimes. How much anger can my suit coat cover? Till suddenly it starts leaking out the edges, and the suit just isn't doing it anymore, and I can wear all the suits I want, and I'm still an angry man. Just how much sin and carnality is my suit coat expected to cover? OK, because we can dress as conservative as the day is long. We can drive black vehicles, and we can sell the black vehicles and drive a horse. We can sell the horse and walk. We can quit walking and become a hermit. You name it. We can dream up more rules. And that's not going to address the anger in my heart. I need something more than rules and suit coats and covering strings to make my heart right with Jesus. Regardless of how important and valuable those things are, I wear a plain coat. Don't hear me knocking these things. Okay. Next. Hockey puck. This was another one of my students I was teaching in Michigan. Shocking, they came up with a hockey puck. And I looked at this thing, and I looked at this thing, and I said, how am I going to talk about a hockey puck? And needing inspiration, I stuck it in a vise and took a hacksaw and chopped the thing in half. And suddenly I got my inspiration. You can't play hockey with half a hockey puck. So I went to school and I tossed it to my high schooler. I said, Kendall, here's a hockey puck. Go play hockey with it. Can't play hockey with this. This isn't a hockey puck. I said, it is too. It is not. It is too. It is not. It is too. I said, look at the sticker on it. It says hockey puck $2.99. The sticker says it's all. He said, it's half a hockey puck, Mr. Hoover. I said, so? It's good enough. No, it's not. Okay, when you catch students off guard and they don't see where you're going with this, it's fun to argue with them. Okay, again, get their attention. You're going to have to push them a little bit. And once they start catching on, pushing them rapidly becomes pointless. You might as well just go with it. I said, what if it was half hockey puck, half peanut butter? Well, I like stick to your stick and stick to your side. Oh, no, that's not going to work. Well, how about glass? Well, it's going to be way too heavy and cold. It's going to shatter. I said, fine. How about, you know, I don't know, White Mountain frosting? Well, that's not going to... Well, what would work for the other half of the hockey puck? Well, a whole hockey puck, please. I said, are you telling me that integrity is important? Are you telling me wholeness is important? That half of a hockey puck is not a hockey puck? That half obedience is not obedience? That half-hearted singing is not wholehearted singing? That getting halfway to heaven is not the same as getting to heaven? That buying half of an ice cream cone is not the same as buying a whole ice cream cone? Half does not equal whole? How often do I try to rationalize that half equals whole? That half-hearted attendance on Sunday morning will slide me through this week. And I can show up late after the third song and slide into the back bench and mumble that's somehow joyful participation in worship. We point these things out easily to our students. How often does it happen with Ryan? How often does half-hearted, you know, love and devotion to my child, do I try to rationalize that that's going to be good enough tonight and, well, tomorrow will be different? Half does not equal whole. In hockey pucks or a marriage or a church, half does not equal whole. Next. Dirty socks. This was another one I worked on. Again, this has some shock value. And I was young and inexperienced. And some days I look back and say, wow, I really did that. I made them each bring a dirty sock to school. And we sat up for devotions, and I made them pull their dirty, and of course they bring them in brown paper bags and things. I said, take your sock out, put it over your hand. And you have to do it too. You can't make them do things you won't do. So I had a dirty sock too, stuck my hand in it. I said, now smell it. I mean, the looks I got were, and fourth graders are real decent at this. This is when it's great to have a mixed classroom. You can just see the difference from young to old. Smell it. Come on, let's do this. And you've got to be with them. You cannot expect them to do anything you won't do. So I smell it. I said, ooh, boy, that's sour. Play with it. Feel how crusty it is. Because it was a sweaty, dirty, disgusting sock. And you know, this is such a nice sock. This is fun. Remember yesterday and what Sue said to me? Oh, isn't this great? Have you smelled my sock? I mean, they're repulsed. This is disgusting. This is uncomfortable. This is awkward. I can feel the tension now talking to you about it. You are giggling uncomfortably. Is this not what we do when we wallow in our bitterness? You remember what Melvin did to me? Have I told you how he wronged me? Remember that hurt? Smell this pain? Remember that? Wow, what a dirty deed. I'm never going to forgive him. I'm having way too much fun playing in my dirty socks. It's socially awkward. It alienates people. My wife doesn't want to come sit on the couch beside me because all I talk about is this dirty sock in my hand. My babies don't want to play with me. Leland and Papa, you're weird. This is gross. That stinks. Ew. Yucky. My neighbors don't want to talk to me. My brother's in church. You know, things are getting strained. It's awkward. It's painful. It's disgusting. I'm driving people away because I'm wallowing in my sock. What's the answer? It's forgive. Throw the sock in the wash. It's dirty, yes. That's why we wash it. Let it go. Take it to Jesus. Forgive. Forgiveness is not excusing what was done. Forgiveness is acknowledging the hurt and choosing to move on. Talked about this just briefly yesterday. Forgiveness does not excuse the act. Forgiveness frees you from the bondage. Forgiveness is opening the prison door and realizing it was I that was the prisoner. I don't know if my students remember this or not. And I've debated myself if I would either actually drag this out and do it again or not, but I've remembered it. Next. Oh, can I move the slide? Sure. We can do that. Thanks, Moses. Next. My tolerance pottery is down in my pickles. Oh, man. Okay. We're going to have to do without pickles. So in college, I took a ceramics course, and I made all sorts of ceramics, and I had fun doing it. I made cream and sugar sets. I made bowls and plates. I had a barrel of fun. I'm not an artistic person at all, and I had fun making ceramics, okay? But I made one small little vase about yay big that completely flopped, and I decided to see how bad I could flop it. So, I mean, literally, the base is off kilter, it's smashed here, the thing is misshapen, like it's not even symmetrical, the glaze on it is misshapen and splattered. I painted the inside with one glaze that just looks black until you put another glaze on top of it, and then it makes this gorgeous blue. Well, I didn't put the other glaze on top of it, and I wrote my name in big, scrawly, nasty letters on the side, upside down. I violated all the rules of pottery. The artist's name should be in the bottom somewhere, unobtrusive, small. It should be symmetrical. It should be attractive. This thing breaks all the rules. I call it my tolerance liberal pottery because this pot embraces all religions and all beliefs. This pot embraces all people, and it validates all ideas, and it accepts everything. And this pot is your ultimate liberal because anything is good enough for this pot. This pot is worthless, other than as an object lesson that I forgot in my dorm. There's no function to it, because it won't stand up, it just falls over. It's worthless, other than as an object lesson. Obedience matters. There's a rule, there's a reason we have rules. Next.
Chainsaw.
Chainsaw. Very simple. The Word of God is sharp. Powerful, sharper than any two-edged sword. I fired up a chainsaw in our gym. It went through my mind, and I came about this close to cutting a wooden table in half. And I went through my mind, okay, what am I going to have to pay to replace that table? I decided not to. But I fired up a steel chainsaw in the gym in front of students. I said, just as this thing is sharp and powerful, how much more is God's word if we let it? Fairly simple, and not a complex theological discussion. The point was, I had their attention. I mean, you drag a steel chainsaw into a gym, I mean, you've got their attention. They're in for this one. Next.
Sledgehammer.
Sledgehammer. Thank you. I was hoping Matt didn't bring this in vain. What's this sledgehammer good for? What could I do with it?
Smash things.
Next. Destroy. Next. Work up a sweat. Next. Injure.
Prop open a door.
Kill.
Pound a stake in.
I took a sledgehammer to my school, and I had a grapefruit there, and with the sledgehammer, I proceeded to make grapefruit juice. They wouldn't drink it. You could use this to flip pancakes. You could flip it to use it to mix up the batter, flip pancakes, cut, and eat pancakes using this sledgehammer. Or you could use it as a sledgehammer. Your choice. But you can make grapefruit juice and pancakes with a sledgehammer. Your bodies were made for a reason. And you can defile those bodies in a whole multiplicity of ways. You can do all sorts of strange and terrible things with the body and the skills and the senses God has given you. Or you can use it the way you intended. Your choice. You can shoot up drugs, and I can show you the most disgusting pictures of the things that happen when you shoot up these drugs. Crocodiles, the name of the latest one. Literally, your flesh rots and falls off your arm. It seems to be a self-limiting addiction. You can do all sorts of violent, violating, disgusting things with the bodies God has given you. It's your choice. You can make grapefruit juice and pancakes with a sledgehammer. They won't look pretty, but I'll bet if I paid you $1,000, you could get it done, right? There you go. It can be done. Or you can use it as a sledgehammer. You can use it to pound stakes and break block and prop open doors and any other manner of things. Your choice. God gave you your body. God gave you a sledgehammer. What are you going to do with it? Next. Biopsy report. How many of you, when you go to the doctor and have a biopsy of a suspicious lymph node, want the doctor to come back and say, we have bad news. This lymph node appears cancerous, and we really need to take it out. How many of you want that? Nobody. How many of you want the doctor to say, it's all fine, it's good, you're clear, it's just a random weird lump, you're fine, go home and in peace? How many of you want the third option, the truth? Nobody wanted the bad biopsy report. We don't want bad news, we need bad news. If I have cancer and a lymph node in my left armpit, I need to know about it. Doctor, don't tell me all is well if all is not well. I need the truth even when it hurts. And when my brother Dwight preaches on the problems of Facebook, I might not like it. I need the truth. And I need to face the truth, and the truth might not be comfortable, and it might not be fun, and it might not be easy. I need the truth. I was in a discussion about homosexuality, interestingly enough, on Facebook. And this person says, but your position is too hard. I said, I didn't say it was easy. Our pastor, Dennis Martin, saw a sign in Walmart, and he bought the thing and promptly hung it up at Maranatha Bible School. It says, I didn't say it would be easy. I said it would be worth it. The easy thing is to hear the doctor say your biopsy report is clean, you're good, go home in peace. We need the truth. And if the truth is ugly, and if the truth is painful, and if the truth hurts, we still need the truth. By the way, it's the same thing on the gas gauge. I could hook up a gas gauge in your car that always reads 3/4 of a tank. Wouldn't that be nice to always have 3/4 tank of fuel? Well, a faulty gas gauge is worthless. I need to know how much fuel's in the tank of my car. Next. Okay, we are almost out of time. I've got two more I want to talk to you. This is what? Kyle, can you tell them?
It's like a cross.
It's a cross. It's made out of a bullet casing. My father-in-law travels to Liberia for Christian Aid roughly once a year. He met the man who makes these. He said he has access to warehouses where they're piled in the piles. Liberia is a country torn by civil war. This man takes bullet casings, cuts them open, flattens them out, smashes them flat, and makes crosses. He also makes complete nativity scenes and other things, and he sells them to support himself. What is he doing? He's taking the instruments of war, of death, and he's pointing you to the cross. What did Joseph tell his brothers? You meant it for evil, but God meant it for good to save people. Come, I'm going to nourish you and your little ones. That's forgiveness. Right here is forgiveness. When I can take the bullets of the world, when I can take the bullets that other people in my own church throw at me, through misunderstanding, through I don't know what, you're going to face bullets in life. Teachers, you're messing with their kids and their money. Seriously, what is wrong with you? You're going to face some bullets sometimes. Can you take those bullets and point them back to the cross? Now, if you want to come up and look at this, you can. I want to show you one other thing very briefly, and we will go. This is a 2015 BMW 535i. Again, you're going to have to match this to your community. If you're in 15-year-old boys, they pretty much all know what Bimmers look like, okay? What is this car worth, quick? 80. Okay? If you're in a heavily ag community, this is a John Deere S680. I have no idea. I just called a John Deere dealer and asked for information. What does this machine with a 12-row chopping head and a 40-foot grain table go for? 8. 800. Both those machines have an oil plug. For lack of an oil plug, that BMW becomes a $3.63 lawn ornament. For lack of an oil plug, that combine becomes a $13 paperweight. The oil plug for an $800,000 combine is $13.18 from SEMA Valley Equipment, Preston, Minnesota. You think little things don't control big things? For lack of a $13 oil plug, that $800,000 combine becomes lawn decoration. Little things are incredibly important. I'm going to dismiss you. You want to come up and talk about any of the others? You may. Oh, by the way, here are all the object lessons explained. I let you go ahead and write them down because if you put them in your words, you'll remember them better. But if you want to come up and grab one of these, this is the explanation for all of them. And I had this written down. I said, I dare not forget. Give me 30 seconds of your time. Be careful of object lessons. They can distract. Me playing with my stethoscope, my tools rattling in my pocket, my beeper going off, all this distracted from what I was saying. Okay? I'm guessing you would have been more comfortable if I'd have been dressed appropriately. Object lessons can distract. Be careful of over the top. Object lessons can distract. Beware. Thanks.
This recording and many others are available through Christian Learning Resource, the campus bookstore at Faith Builders. Order online at www.christianlearning.org or call 877-222-4769.